Welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I am Chris Austin.
And I am Luke Parker.
And this is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the Phoenix Cinema in North London. And this week we are discussing Brazilian filmmaker Walter Salles' new film, the Oscar winner for Best International Film, I'm Still Here.
So I'm Still Here is a Brazilian-French political drama directed by Walter Salles, based on the memoir by Marcelo Rubens Paiva. It follows the story of Eunice Paiva, played by Fernanda Torres, a woman searching for her husband Rubens, who disappeared during Brazil's 1970s military dictatorship. The film explores Eunice's relentless quest for answers and justice, enduring personal and state-sanctioned trauma, as well as the unresolved pain of the dictatorship's victims. Premiering at the Venice International Film Festival, I'm Still Here received critical acclaim, winning Best Screenplay and a Golden Globe for Best Actress for Torres. It made history at last week's Oscars for becoming the first Brazilian film to win Best International Feature, and the film ignited national conversations about Brazil's dark past, reigniting efforts to uncover the truth about the military regime's human rights abuses. So, Chris, how was this one for you?
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, I thought
how can
it
you
was...
not?
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
This is a piece of art.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, man. I actually was struggling with almost what to say in this podcast because it's just... It's one of the cleanest, like, perfectly crafted films that I've seen in a very long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hella statement right there. Okay. Great. Well, that's, I mean, I don't know if I'm as enthusiastic about it as you are. But however, no, let's get into it because I think it's genuinely compelling. I think it's haunting and ultimately sad and tragic. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really tough story. And I will confess to not knowing much about the, you know, Brazil's history and its mm-hmm. dictatorship and all of that. So it's, yeah, it really drops you into this place and time, and it's quite informative. And yeah, I feel like I was dropped into Rio de Janeiro in 1970. You know what
Absolutely,
I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
I feel the heat, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you find so incredible about it?
Well, I think if you take away all the incredible filmmaking, even just the film itself and what it's trying to say and what it's trying to tell already makes it an incredibly important piece of film history, in my opinion. And that's without it being such a perfect example of the craft, just in terms of the story that's trying to say and it trying to bring this period of history to light to contemporary audiences.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like you. I didn't know anything about this. I didn't even know that Brazil was under a military dictatorship any time
yeah,
in history.
Yeah, same.
That's
true.
How ignorant I am to all this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it was quite shocking to see. Yeah, I love the start of the film. I think it's incredibly patient and it builds
yes.
such a strong, beautiful image of this family, and it just feels so real. And then
yeah.
for them to be thrown into this awful, this painful, awful situation, and how it affects every one of them, especially Eunice, you know, Fernanda Torres' character. It's just very well done, very emotive.
Yeah, I really agree with that. And it's the it's great performances by the entire cast.
Mm-hmm. Across the board, even these young kids, you know.
Especially, yeah. And it feels like a real family.
It's like a documentary.
Yeah, it really, it does feel that way. yeah, it's such an amazing ensemble, and I bought it. Yeah, I absolutely buy them as a family. Mm-hmm. They feel so lived in. Like you said, it's a very patient story, and yet I get all this history of them as a family.
100%.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that was really, really impressive. I absolutely agree with that. And I think if any element of that was off, if I didn't buy them as a family, this entire, I think it would crumble at its, because that's the whole point of this film, is that a member of this family is taken away, mm-hmm. and you're meant to feel that whole. So yeah, if any of those performances didn't work, I think it would have weakened the film significantly. Thank God it doesn't.
Absolutely. They are all really, really great. But, you know, testament as well to Fernanda Torres. Like, she deserves all the credit she's getting.
Yeah, she really does. She really does. And you know, another thing that's brilliant about the film is, thank you for introducing me to Fernanda Torres.
Yeah.
You know, and a Brazilian actress who has had a career, mm-hmm. you know, and is like, has already had a very significant career. And I'm only now being introduced to her, I guess, thanks to not just Phoenix Cinema, but the popularity of this mm-hmm. film and how it's been pushed out there and recognized by these awards bodies. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Was she nominated for the Oscar?
I want to say she was. Okay. I'm pretty sure that she was. I mean, I can quickly look it up here.
Well, she should have been either way.
Yeah, I mean, she won the Golden Globe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know she didn't win the Oscar, but let me see. Best Actress, yes, she was nominated for an
cool.
Oscar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Deservedly so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's great to see these, like, international films be pushed more into, like, the main categories as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's becoming a very, very satisfying trend now. Yeah. At the Oscars. And to be honest, I mean, it was always going to win Best International Picture, because yep. if it's also nominated as just Best Picture, then clearly that's the standout of the yep. international yep. pack.
You know, I remember, like, all the kickback that Parasite got for even being nominated in the Best Picture category, you know, because people were complaining that, you know, it's got its own international film category, but that makes no sense to me. If it's the Best Picture, it should sit within the Best Picture, like, nomination.
100%. And I love the fact that it won. Woo!
Oh, yeah.
That was, I mean, it was historic, wasn't it? But and so well-deserved.
Oh, yeah.
So well-deserved, yeah. But this was an interesting film, too, because I feel, I mean, to me, I don't know how you feel about this, but it does feel, I mean, it's a compelling film, but it feels like it hits its peak fairly early on, dramatically, when there are armed men in the house.
Sure. I can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like for the rest of the film, it's not relying on any kind of peak in intensity or drama. It's very much about the experience of Fernanda Torres's character, and it's, if you think about what it's trying to kind of represent in terms of, this is the hole that's left in her life and it's never going away, and there's not really anything she can do about it. Like, realistically, what kind of drama is it going to reach if really the point of the film is to teach you, is to almost inform us or put us in her shoes? You know, it's going to reach the drama early, and then the rest of the film is going to be about her dealing with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think if this was a fictional movie, then maybe there's a chance for a few more, I don't know, dramatic peaks
mm-hmm.
on that same level of, oh my God, there are armed men in the house. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I guess life...
Yeah, but even then, those armed men in the house, it was definitely the point of most drama. But for me, it wasn't even that intense. It was kind of played in a very real, natural way. It wasn't, well, what's the word? It didn't feel very Hollywood, let's just say that, you know?
Yeah. And again, even that, I know what you mean, because, I mean, at one point, one of them is playing foosball with the kid, right?
Yeah.
And yet there was like this edge to them. There was this, I didn't trust them whatsoever. They still seemed quite scary to me, you know?
Yeah.
And... Yeah. But yeah, you know, this is telling a true story, this film. And so I guess outside of it being a narrative work of fiction, you had to kind of follow what happened in life. And so, yes, in the movie, it does seem to reach this peak dramatically. And then everything afterwards is the aftermath, right? And it's this woman trying to find out what happened to my husband. Where is he? When is he coming back? And this family trying to cope with that. And yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I had no idea where we were going every step of the way. Did you?
No idea at all. Like I said, could I know nothing never, about the story.
Yeah, I could never predict what twist or turn it was going to take.
And I love that the film wasn't just solely concentrated on the wife's character, on this kind of, you know, her chasing her own tail, trying to find him and find out what happened to him. I love how the film really concentrates on the impact on the family as a whole, like on her children as well. It must be like quite difficult to do from a filmmaking's perspective to kind of keep that balance. But it's done masterfully, in my opinion.
Such a great point. Yeah. I mean, there's a point in the film, you know, so, you know, where she's brought in for questioning along with, you know, her other daughter. And this goes on for a prolonged period of time. But when she finally gets home.
Oh, the relief. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love how the film really takes its time to show you the impact of her return home to every single child. Mm-hmm. In most films, you could skip that. You know, or you deal with it in just one moment, you know, probably as soon as she gets home, she'll open the door to her children's bedroom and give them a hug while she's asleep or find some contrived. Whereas this has many separate moments that deal with that. And to the point where at one point I was smiling and almost getting a bit emotional because I couldn't help but put myself in the position of the parent and the kids, you know, and just thinking about
how helpless they must feel. Yeah.
What if this movie does a really good job of, yes, it's specifically the 70s. Yes, it's specifically Brazil and the government and the culture and what these people were going through, but you can't help but go, what if this was me? Mm-hmm. You know, it's so universal in this story. At the end of the day, it's just an emotional story of a family being ripped apart by forces outside of their control. Yeah.
And quite a big part of the film that I wasn't too sure about at first, and I've kind of had time to think about it a bit more since watching it a few days ago, was kind of, there's almost two epilogues to this film, isn't there? We kind of jump forward into the future for the last 10 minutes, and then we jump forward again. And I mentioned this when we talked about The Brutalist as well, that I usually...
So glad you're bringing this up.
I usually hate this in films. It usually just feels so unnecessary. And at first, I kind of had that attitude to how they did it in this film, especially the latter part where they like go all the way forward to like 2014 or something.
Yeah.
I just didn't really understand it.
Yeah.
But in hindsight, I feel like if you're going to do that in any sort of film, it should be this film, because it's about how the pain never goes away. You know, it's about how they don't get over the pain. They just learn to live with it. And that hole is always there. And having Torres's character right at the end, having, because we then find out that she was going through Alzheimer's disease, so she must have, you know, forgotten.
You know, is that what they said? Oh, that's,
yeah,
what, that's
the ending
why
credits,
she's...
Yeah.
Ah, okay. You know, oh, right, right, yeah. Right, right.
But then that kind of... that heartbreaking almost glimmer in her eyes when she sees Ruben's character come up on the TV. Yeah. So actually, I'm quite happy with how they finished it.
I'm so glad you mentioned this, because it did stay on my mind too. And I did think of The Brutalist in the exact same way. And all I could think is that endings seem to be a hard thing to pull off. I feel like more and more films I'm seeing don't quite know how to end or where and when to end. And to that point, I'm not entirely sure the final scene is necessary here.
Yeah.
What does it add? Yeah. What does it add to what we've already seen? I don't. However, yes, it's probably extremely necessary just for that one moment that you just mentioned. And there's this really, oh, it's so sad, but you look at her age and how she is so completely unresponsive and unemotional to her entire family around her. But seeing this picture of her husband when he was still the age that he was. And it's so subtle, Luke, isn't it? But she just shifts in her chair a bit and something comes to life in her eyes.
It's like glimpse of recognition. Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes me so, oh, it's devastating.
It's devastating. Really sad.
You know, I could only think, honestly, I put myself in the shoes of, I mean, I just pictured me and my girlfriend now. And if these men came to the house and said, listen, you're coming in for questioning. And I walk out to the car and I look back and just that look they give each other, the smile of, it's okay. You know, I'll see you after this nonsense is over. You know, what is amazing about that moment, Luke, as well, with Fernanda Torres, is he smiles at her from the car. She smiles back, but the camera lingers on her. And something happens to her face. It changes. The smile becomes something else. And you just read her thoughts. And I think there's nothing more greater in a screen actor than when you can read what they're thinking without any dialogue.
Yeah, that's so well put. Totally agree with that. It's almost, they both know, but they're both trying to reassure each other in that one moment. They're almost kidding themselves, I guess. But yeah, you put that so well.
So, fun fact, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Salles, the director, he directed a Brazilian film called Central Station in 1998. Did you know about this?
But I've heard of it, yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, that film was nominated for Best, I guess at the time it was called Best Foreign Film. Now it's called Best International Film. And the lead actress, her name is Fernanda Montenegro, who in real life is the mother of the lead actress in this movie, Fernanda Torres, who was also nominated for an Oscar for this movie. And Montenegro is actually in this movie playing her daughter as the old woman at the end of the film.
Okay. Playing. Yeah. Okay. I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
You know, super cool. So Salles has directed both these lead women, two generations of the same family, and they both got Oscar nominations out of it. Wow. Isn't that
That's very cool.
amazing? However, I believe this is the third time he's worked with this lead actress, Fernanda Torres. Okay. And I personally would love to go back and check out.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any of his filmography.
I've seen none of it. I've seen none of it.
It's a big hole for me.
It is. Yeah. I think I've heard about one of the films that he did, which was, I think I even attempted to watch it once and I got distracted, but it was The Motorcycle Diaries with, who's that lead actor? What's his name? Very, very famous. Gael Garcia Bernal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I attempted to watch that once, and I don't know. I don't know what happened. I remember the opening credits, funnily enough. I remember the opening credits.
Maybe it just wasn't for you.
maybe. But now I'm like, okay, I'd like to dig into this fella a bit more. Yeah.
And, you know, again, I'm so, so happy with how much attention this film's getting. You know, it piqued my interest a little while ago when I saw it on Letterboxd. And it had like an average rating of 4.4, which is kind of unheard of on there. And
interesting.
You know, everyone was kind of low-key going crazy about it. And then it kind of went from my radar. And then kind of amongst the awards season, the hype kind of picked up again. And it's all, it makes perfect sense. I think this film is just incredible. I think everyone should watch it.
I mean, yes, I highly recommend it as well to everybody. I'm not as convinced though. I mean, I am okay. Still a bit. Listen, I enjoyed it, but I don't think it's as powerful. I mean, no, I wanted it to be, I guess, more powerful than what it is. I was actually quite surprised by it. I thought it's a very slight film. It was smaller than I expected, and actually, all the major hype over it has actually quite surprised me. Listen, okay. I'm all for it.
No, I understand.
I'm glad. Yeah. But I'm like, if you're going to be nominated for Best International Film, that's one thing. But if you also put it in that category of Best Picture, I'm expecting something on the level of a Parasite, whatever that might mean. You know what I mean? I feel like Parasite had a
I think this film, for me, this film sits comfortably on the same level as Parasite. I think the filmmaking, like I've said, the filmmaking itself is just exactly what it needs to be, and it's perfectly contained. But the reason it's getting all this attention is because of what it's saying and what it's bringing the spotlight to. You know, and I think it deserves all the credit for that.
Preach, Luke. Preach, my friend. Okay, all right. I love that. I love that you love it as well. I was worried that you wouldn't.
Okay.
Because I know from, well, I don't know why, but I knew from like both of us, you were like, even before we watched A Real Pain, before we covered that on this podcast, you were like,
kind of
we need to watch I'm Still Here. Yes, you did. So just in the back of my mind, after I watched it, I was like, I really hope this film lives up to Luke's expectations. So I'm glad that it did.
I just want to say as well, I had like one of the best cinema going experiences as well. Like my,
oh, tell me.
I mean, it's bad to say it because obviously I want the cinema to be like doing well, but I was the only one in the screen and it was like, I had the whole place to myself. It was just perfect.
You know, it's got to be said of all the films that we cover from What Phoenix Cinema Show, you know, the Phoenix Cinema like to primarily promote independent, you know, what they call art house films. Yeah. You know, they're not really the big blockbusters. And so sometimes it is quite lovely to go and watch this film because it means sometimes the numbers are quite less.
Yeah.
In terms of audience viewing. Yeah. Definitely with like About Dry Grasses, for instance, you know.
Oh yeah, I can imagine.
Turkish movie. There's hardly anyone in there. Or it's like the older, much older, sure, midday matinee crowd. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised though, because do you know what? When I saw it, the film, the screen was fairly busy on midday.
That's great. That's still like that. At the same time, that's great. But
I was like, where are all these people coming from? I guess it really reached a lot of people, but wow. Where are you? You're in the Cotswolds, right?
Yeah. So my local cinema actually, like, it had a really small run of like a week for this film, like last month, I think. And then it stopped. But then luckily they started doing a few showings of some of the Oscar nominees. So like, mm-hmm, at the moment they're playing Anora like every night, for example.
Okay, sure.
And then like, and they're advertising it as, you know, the Oscar winner, come watch it.
Yes.
So luckily I managed to catch it on the big screen through that.
Okay, good, good. Well, I mean, hopefully, yeah, hopefully now post Oscars and it's post, you know, best international film win and best picture nominee. Hopefully now that's going to boost its, yeah, its, yeah. Its appeal, I guess.
Yeah.
One thing as well that I wanted to touch on. So, you know, you get at the very end of the film in our final coda, you see one of the kids, you know, he was the young boy throughout the whole movie. He's now an adult and he's in a wheelchair.
Yep.
And it goes completely unremarked upon. You get no explanation for why, what happened to him. Do you know why?
Well, it's mentioned that he had an accident. That's about as far as it goes, you know, when he,
that's
when
it, yeah,
he's signing that autograph for that woman. But
yes,
you know, I guess there doesn't really need to be an explanation considering that it's based on his memoir.
No, I get it. I don't think I needed it. I was just majorly curious. Yeah. So yes, it's him, right? It's Marcello Paiva. This is the guy who wrote the book that the film is based on. Yeah. Yeah. So I Wikipedia'd it. He jumped into a shallow lake at the age of 20 and fractured his spine. Yeah.
Oh.
But there's something like so cool, not cool, but in terms of like passage of time, how it hits you with all of a sudden you see this vibrant young kid. He's got friends on the street. He's just, you know, he plays football. He's just this active. He's just this kid. He's a boy. And then you fast forward 20 something years and he's just completely paralyzed from the waist down. And you know, that's just his life now. And you have to get on with it. And it's like, it's so what the passage of time can do to someone, you know?
Yeah. Even with the young girl as well, you know, she was this really sweet young girl. And then 25 years later, you know, she's this beautiful woman, but you can almost see how life weary she is. And she looks tired.
Yeah.
You know, and on both of their faces, you see that almost cautious relief at the point where she's holding up the death certificate and the press come in. I would have been happy if the film finished there.
Agreed. Yes, agreed. Agreed.
So I get what you're saying with that very last coda being unnecessary. I think it did have a place, but, you know, the film could have had that same impact if we had that moment of her with the death certificate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually really agree with that. But then saying that as well, that final scene we get, how good are those actors? I completely buy that this is a formed family, you know?
It almost feels like I'm invading when I'm watching it, you know? Because of how real it feels.
Yeah, and credit to those actors who have come in at the end of however long this movie is, for one scene, and you are seamlessly making me believe that you are the, not just the aged characters we saw earlier, but brand new characters who were just now part of the family because your spouses and all of that, you know? So well done.
For me as well, I will say that I did read a bit about the film and kind of people's responses to the films before watching it. And, you know, a lot of people's, they were saying, oh, it's very sad, or throughout the film I was crying or on the verge of crying. And it is an incredibly, just to put it bluntly, it is a very depressing film and it's very sad. But for me, the point where the emotions hit me hardest was at the cut to the credits and when we had the montage of the real pictures from the real family. Because even though the film feels incredibly real and incredibly intimate, there is kind of this veneer over it that makes me realize I am watching a film. And then when we have those pictures come up at the end and these little bits of explanation, it really hits you then that what you're seeing is real and this is actually what people went through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a, we've seen this a million times before.
Yeah.
Right. let's throw in the pictures in the end credits of the actual characters this movie's depicting, and even the moments mm-hmm. that you didn't know, you know. But it's incredibly, there's a reason it's been used before. It's so effective, and it's still effective today. It just makes you think, right? And it makes, and I just look, kept looking at his face, the husband, and just, yeah, I don't know. It's so haunting. And then what happens is your mind, right, just goes to what happened in the end.
Yeah.
And how, and I don't even want to go there, but now you're making me, you know?
Yeah. It's the best way to finish it, because exactly what you're saying, it makes you, as you're walking out of the cinema, that's what's in your mind. You're thinking, this was real. This actually happened.
Yes, exactly.
And that's, well, I imagine that's one of the main goals for the filmmaker.
Is to leave you with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, shall we do pairings?
Let's do it. Do you want to go first? Right.
Okay, sure. So I have gone with this movie just entered my head while I was watching this movie, and it's the film Roma from 2018. Okay. The Alfonso Cuarón film.
I haven't seen it, heard amazing things.
Oh my God, you haven't seen it. Okay, well then now's your excuse. Now's the reason for you to watch this. I think the movie's absolutely incredible. It won, I'm pretty sure, because it was also nominated up the wazoo mm-hmm. At the Academy Awards. But yeah, it's a film set in, I think it's Mexico City. And it's I think it's based on Alfonso Cuarón's life.
Yeah.
Growing up, but what I love about it is it focuses on this housekeeper of this upper middle class Mexican family. It specifically focuses on this housekeeper, and you know, this movie, I'm Still Here, has a housekeeper in it who is so integral to the family and the stability of the household. And yeah, I guess, you know, in this culture, especially for people who earn a decent wage, that's what you have. You know, you have a nice house, you have a housekeeper who looks after the place. And the movie Roma just makes me think of my mum, because she's been a housekeeper for, you know, all my life, for many different families, some very wealthy people and famous people, and because she's really good at what she does. And the way he just takes the time as a young... he's one of the young kids in the film mm-hmm. and it's black and white and it's gorgeous to watch. And yeah, it just, those are the only comparisons I could think, because it represents again, a family that you just utterly buy as a family.
Oh, nice.
In all their faults and in all their, you know, eccentricities and everything. And yeah, whereas in this film, we're focusing on, you know, the mother and the father of the family, and the housekeeper's a side character, Roma just zooms the focus in on her mm-hmm. and what she goes through with the family in the background. So I highly recommend this movie. It is, I personally think it's genius.
Yeah, it's been on my list for a while, so it's definitely an excuse to watch it.
Yeah, excellent.
I've got like a really basic bitch answer.
I love those.
I mentioned this before the podcast, but you know, I really struggled to think of a pairing for this. I'm almost embarrassed to say it. Oh well.
No. So none of that.
I'd pair it with Prisoners.
Prisoners, explain this to me, sir.
Only because, you know, it's very much focused on how an individual is coping with the loss of someone that they love and how they'll go mm-hmm. to like any lengths to get them back. Obviously it's an incredibly different film. It's very Hollywood, it's very gritty and violent, but in terms of this focus on Hugh Jackman's character, there were kind of some parallels there for me with Torres's character.
Now I see it. Yeah. Now I see it.
They're,
yeah.
They're both amazing films. So.
Yeah, they really are. And I've said this to you before, Prisoners is probably the best ending or one of the best endings to a movie I've ever seen. Like, yeah. We've already mentioned on this episode, you know, that endings are hard. And that is how you nail it. Honestly.
It's textbook. Yeah, totally agree.
It is. You cut to black on that moment and you show the credits. All you can do is applaud. Yeah. And we watched it in our film club, didn't we? And Hugh Jackman's performance, I mean, it's one of the best performances he's ever given.
Easily. Yeah.
Easily. What other role has asked him to be so raw and vulnerable and volatile? Mm. Oh, yeah. Prisoners is a standout film.
One of the best.
Wow. So we've got Villeneuve and Cuarón repairing this with. I mean,
that's big.
If anyone decides to do this triple feature, that is a hell of a journey. Yeah. All right. Excellent. Well, yes. I mean, listen, I'm glad you loved it. I really enjoyed it. And awesome. And like you said, Luke, I highly recommend people go watch this movie.
Yep, 100%.
Before we go, I wanted to mention also, we recently had the devastating news that Gene Hackman, along with his wife and dog, were found dead in their home last week. Hugely sad news. He was a screen legend, a powerful, powerful actor, one of my favorite actors. And he leaves behind an incredible legacy of performances and great movies. We recently watched Crimson Tide in our film club.
Oh,
and
what a movie. Oh,
what a film. And his performance in that film is certainly up there with one of his best ever.
I mean, I recently watched French Connection as well for the first time. So
I've never seen it.
It's pretty cool, man. It's pretty cool.
Oh, cool. Is that William... Yes. Is it William Friedkin or is it Coppola? So. I always get confused. Oh, yes, it's Friedkin, I think. Yeah. And then The Conversation is Coppola. Yes, both films... I've never seen, and they're both heralded as, you know, his greats. But he will be missed. And now we have a chance to deep dive into the entirety of his long and illustrious career and celebrate his work for all time.
Awesome.
Thank you for listening, everyone. And Luke, thank you again, sir. I'm going to see you on the next one, buddy.
See you on the next one.
Special thanks to Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger. You can find more of his music on stefan-krieger.com. I highly encourage you to do that because he has got some tunes. And our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. Please, if you like the podcast, spread the word far and wide. Like, rate, and subscribe. And then after you've done all that, go and watch I'm Still Here at the Phoenix Cinema. And I will see you there.